Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. The United States is among the world's leading nations in rates of incarcerations of its people. As Jesse Jackson once says, it costs more to go to jail than to Yale. Now, he was speaking to just the cost of imprisoning someone, not the cost in financial or emotional or health terms for the families of people who are incarcerated. Indeed, very little attention is paid to what happens to the children of incarcerated parents. And here to talk with us about this quite hidden issue is Kathleen Falk, a faculty member at the City University of New York at City College of Technology, and a family nurse practitioner, and the director of the college's mentoring program for Children of Promise, a program for children of incarcerated parents. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, I'm happy to be here.
So tell us, why should people care about this issue? Why should we care about the children of people who are incarcerated?
They are among one of our most vulnerable populations in the United States, and they are really a hidden population and a silent population. As a result of the high rates of incarceration since 1990, which was a reflection of legislation that changed, getting tough on crime and three strikes you're out, and also putting people in jail for drug-related felonies when there was no violent crime committed. So, and more lengthy sentences. So all
and this was mostly in New York.
This is throughout the United States.
Throughout the United States.
Yes,
okay.
So the population has increased, of course, as you mentioned. And what has happened since the change in the increase in prison population, of course, is the unintended result of the children, the amount of children who have a parent in prison has gone up 80%. And if we just look at the mothers, the rate of mothers who are in prison, it's gone up 131%.
And these increases have been over what period of time?
Since 1991.
Oh, my. So do we know how many kids are affected?
We do, because it was a very big survey that was done by the justice system, the U.S. justice system, and they looked at it. They did a very big study. And what they can estimate, it's somewhere between 2.3 and 2.5 million children. Mm-hmm. And these are children who are 18 and under. And anybody that's had an adolescent knows that at 18 years old, they're not really ready to be out on their own. So we don't even see the 18 to 22-year-old population in this count.
And who are these kids?
These kids are actually everywhere, but they're more concentrated in the urban areas where there's very extreme poverty. So usually living a family of four on about $10,000 a year, and in the areas where there's more high crime.
So it's sort of mind-boggling to think that a family of four could live off of $10,000 a year, isn't it? So talk about the risk factors for these children. What are the concerns that we have?
Well, the risk factors are that, first of all, they have a parent that they're separated from, and their parent is not dead, but is missing, and really, for most of these children, they really can't even afford to go visit their parent in prison because it costs too much money. If you're in a federal prison, it could be in another state. If you're living in New York City, it might be an 8-10 hour drive to the upper Adirondack areas of New York State. So they really, that's the first thing, a separation. And that they have the issue of living in such severe poverty, they don't stay in one place for very long. So they move around a lot. They don't establish roots and friends and the same teachers and so forth. And the issue is, you know, high crime and mental health problems that could lead to then substance abuse.
So children of people who are incarcerated are more likely to have some of these problems, even compared with other children living in poverty.
Yes. Yes, it's, you know, the studies that we've looked at, and again, it's a very hidden population, the children with incarcerated parents are, the statistics are hidden in the foster care system. It's hidden in government agencies like Administration for Children's Services, and they're hidden in basically the juvenile justice system. But we know by, you know, doing a very large survey of our current adult prison population that when they were children, they were exposed to parents who used drugs, parents who were in prison, parents that had mental health problems, issues of poverty. These are all like risk factors.
So what do we know about the rate of incarceration of these children as juveniles and then later as adults?
Well, there's really no statistics to say, really say 70% are going to go in or 60%. But if you look at the statistics that when these risk factors compound, in other words, if you keep compounding the risk factors, that and it really will go much higher. So you can imagine maybe 60 or 70% will have some sort of contact with the juvenile justice system. And when they have that, it's almost a guarantee that their risk factor, again, jumps tremendously, that they're going to be in the adult criminal justice system.
So think for a moment, if you would, of a child that you know who is the child of an incarcerated parent who has had exposure to the criminal justice system himself or herself. How does that child present?
Well, they usually present with physical aggression. That's what I see. The children who are living with, you know, parents in prison in extreme poverty, they are in the survival mode. And if they don't learn the social and emotional skills, they use what they have, the one skill that they have, which is to learn to survive. And one of those ways to learn to survive is physical aggression. And that's usually, you know, one of the presenting problems, that they don't control their impulses. And if you don't control your impulses, then you could get into trouble. And one of the ways they get into trouble is they commit offenses to our, you know, our laws.
So if this is an intergenerational issue, how do you break this cycle?
The way you can break it is with the children at an early age. Our goal in the program that I work in is that our goal is to keep them in school and prevent them from ever entering the juvenile justice system. Because if we can keep them in school and not entering the juvenile justice system, and they graduate from high school and have a plan and either get a vocation or go to college, they will be out of the cycle. There's a very, very high chance they'll be out of the cycle.
But this must be very challenging given the fact that these children are on the move a lot. They don't have a lot of stability in their lives.
It is very challenging, and that's why there's very little research, because you really can't do an interventional study, because you would see them at the baseline, you would start to do an intervention, but you wouldn't be able to do a follow-up because of the amount that they move around. The one good thing that they've done in New York City is they've passed a law that when a child has to switch residences or becomes homeless, they can still attend their home-based school. So that's a big, big plus. So that if I had children in my program now and they became homeless, they could still attend my program because they can still attend their home-based school until permanent housing can be had.
So you need supports from the local community in terms of supporting this child having some consistency in at least their educational base. And what else do we need?
Well, we need a lot more community support in terms of being able to treat children in the community and be able to intervene early. That's what we need. Because in New York State, the recent legislature, first of all, was passed that children can be diverted from the juvenile justice system to the Office of Children and Family Services. And then it's determined, does this child really need detention, or can they go to a community-based treatment center? So So that's a big change. But we're going to need nurses and other health professionals to really intervene with these children in the community, hopefully in the prevention stage, because, you know, it's important to treat them once you know that there's a problem and they go into the juvenile justice system, but really prevention is the best thing. So you need mental health services. You need community nursing. You know, a lot of the schools have only one school nurse for 750 students. So you really wouldn't be able to do much except, you know, dealing with, you know, some acute problems. But in terms of really identifying children who are starting to have, you know, mental health problems and really need a lot more guidance, and they don't have the emotional and social skills, they need to develop them.
And, you know, when you think about the quote that I cited of Jesse Jackson's at the opening, that it costs more to go to jail than to Yale, if you could prevent incarceration of three of these youth, it would fund essentially three nurses in schools and would provide a much greater capacity for that prevention, wouldn't it?
Yes, it really would. And the amount of savings over the lifetime and generation is just priceless. You can't even begin to add it up. But on the other hand, if you put a child into juvenile detention in a residence and they're detained, it's about $300,000 a year just for the detention, not for the judicial, you know, court proceedings and all the other administrative costs, just to house that child there. And, you know, the National Center of Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University did the most extensive survey of mental health and substance abuse care for children who enter juvenile justice, and they really found it to be quite appalling. The results were worse than they even thought. So only 1% of that $14.4 billion goes towards direct treatment for mental health and substance abuse. So for the $300,000 a year, the child's not getting the proper care in terms of treatment.
And actually, several years ago, Health Styles did a program on the extent to which our youth who have mental health problems are being incarcerated, or if parents are being pushed to give up their parental rights so that they can get access to some treatment, but they don't get the treatment. And it really is an appalling situation, and you figure that these kids are even more vulnerable. And so it seems that one of the components here has to be some mental health intervention early on, ways to find psychological, emotional supports for these children who are really struggling with the loss of a parent. So tell us a little bit about the program that you have and what you do. And we might frame this as, you know, all health professionals have a role to play with these kids, as do others, all people in our communities, when we see these kids, to be thinking about what kind of supports do these kids have. And you have taken it upon yourself to try to do something in terms of how nurses can do a better job of identifying these children and intervening in a positive way.
Okay, so our program has a focus on mentoring, giving the children a positive role model, and really using the theories about modeling and being able to change behavior through modeling. So we have actually registered nurses who are in a RN to BS program. These are registered nurses who are out there in our Brooklyn hospitals working, and they're pursuing, an additional degree. And it's part of an urban health curriculum. So you can't get much more urban health than dealing with this population. So they work with the children directly. They work with them at least once a week, and they spend time with them and really helping them develop social and emotional learning. And one of the ways they do that is by talking to them, asking them how their week went, what's been happening, and coming up with alternate strategies. That's really very important, because when I talk to the children who live in these areas, they have a very narrow view of their choices and their future. And when we explore with them different ways of dealing with things, they're really quite receptive. And we work with them, and then we say, okay, so what are you going to do from now to the next time I see you with this issue. And they'll say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then we come back the next week and we say, okay, let's go over that. Let's see, you know, how you did with whatever it was. One little boy was at the verge, really, of getting expelled because he had physical aggression. And we work with him to put cold water on his face. He said, oh, my face gets real hot, and then I get mad, and I strike out. And so what we did with him was we said, okay, when you feel like that, move, you know, go into the bathroom and put cold water on your face until the heat in your face goes away. And he was able to do that. We worked with him. It took a while. But the physical aggression stopped, and he learned to control himself. Mm. So that was a big... big improvement for him, and he will take that ability, that self-confidence and that self-efficacy to control himself regardless of the situation throughout his life. So it's something that not only is it learned, but it's sustainable.
Let me remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles, and we are talking with Kathleen Falk, who is a family nurse practitioner and on faculty at City University of New York's City College of Technology. She's also the director of the college's mentoring program for Children of Promise. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm really pleased to have Kathleen with us. And Kathleen, I have to say, I love the title of your program, Program for Children of Promise. It says a whole lot about how you see these children.
It's true. They unfortunately... they are told not to tell anybody that they have a parent in prison because there's such a social stigma involved. So we purposely didn't put the word prison in the title of the program because we felt that whoever these children are living with would feel that it further stigmatizes them. So we call it the Children of Promise, but it also says that no one knows what's going to happen, you know, when a child is born and brought into our world. And that's actually... the reflection of a national AMACHI, it's called AMACHI, A-M-A-C-H-I program, and it's a national mentoring program for children of promise. And the word AMACHI means, it's like a West African like phrase, meaning no one knows what is being brought into the world through this child. Mm. So basically anything is possible. And, you know, that's in my profession, the caring profession of nursing, is that the possibilities when you're working with a client, between the nurse and the client, there are infinite possibilities.
So we have your program, there's AMACHI, there's also the Family Nurse Partnership that's a national program and actually started in Elmira, New York. And this is a program that's had some success in reducing incarceration rates of youth, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that program, because I hadn't realized that there was that connection with the incarceration, children of incarcerated parents.
Right. So this program is for first-time mothers, usually single mothers, teenagers living in low-income areas, and given their risk factors, we would be able to tell by our prison population, the risk factors in terms of how many of them would have ended up in incarceration and their children possibly in incarceration related to mental health problems and substance abuse and poverty. So that program hooks a registered nurse with one of these young mothers-to-be and stays with them throughout the pregnancy and for 2 years after the child is born. When they looked at longitudinal studies way in the future, you know, when these kids were well, you know, grown, they found despite the risk factors of the mothers, they had a very, very low rate of incarceration. They had a high rate of finishing school, low rates of substance abuse, and low rates of mental health problems. So if we could somehow develop a nursing model that could somehow help these children. And, of course, the difficult component here is to try to be able to follow them because they move around so much. But if they had community support, and part of that program would be that they have stable housing no matter what, that they would be able to, you know, that they wouldn't be getting evicted and those kinds of things. If they had they if part of the program was that they had housing, then you really could follow them.
And so it, the AMACHI program, are they looking at trying to replicate what the Family Nurse Partnership has done with the incarcerated children of incarcerated parents?
There is a connection in that AMACHI has really encouraged and actually gotten the Family Nurse Partnership to start to deal with mothers who have entered the prison system. Mm. And they still work with them, first, you know, behind bars, and then afterwards outside. And that program is in the very, very early stages, and they really don't have any quantitative data except for how many people that they're servicing and how many families. So that really is a first step in bringing it to the problem. I would like to be able to have something similar to the Family Nurse Partnership, but deal really in prevention before those people grow up and go into the prison system. You really want to break the cycle.
So if you could wave a magic wand and do anything you could with this issue, what do you think are the most important things that you would want people to support?
Well, I would say programs that really support the children, as much positive relationships as they could have, supportive relationships, positive experiences like camps in the summer. You know, a lot of them just sit in a hot apartment building all summer with nothing to do. So those kind of, you know, programs, stable housing, and it really does take a village.
Yes.
It really, really does. It takes a lot of, you know, support from various people and communities. Unfortunately, you know, where my programs are, there isn't a lot to draw from mm-hmm. the community. So we have to take people from, you know, outside the immediate community for the time being, pull them in until you can strengthen, you know, the actual, you know, location right around there.
So I would imagine that there might be somebody listening to this program who thinks, I know we have these children in our community and we need to do something about it. How could they find out more information about how to set up a community-based program to identify these kids and to reach out to them and develop some supportive relationships?
Well, on the AMACHI website, there's a whole institute that deals with training people to set up mentoring programs. So that if you wanted to set up a mentoring program, you could go to the institute in Philadelphia. It's free of charge, and you get training, and you can apply for grants through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. You can get a VISTA, like a Peace Corps worker, to help you set things up, and that's what I've been able to get. So there is some basic instructions. Also, I mean, if you want to participate in terms of mentoring, the Big Brothers and Sisters Organization mm-hmm. of New York has special programs just for children who do have incarcerated parents. So if you wanted to become a mentor and you really want to hone in on this population, you could say, do you have Children of Prisoners program?
And that's not just in New York. It might be anywhere, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Big Brothers and Big Sisters is throughout the United States. So that's one way. And AMACHI organizations are also now a national program.
And again, AMACHI, you would Google that at AMACHI. Is that
right.
Correct?
That's correct.
All right. Well, and is there information on your program?
Yes. If you could, you just send me an email at kfalk. It's K, F as in Frank, A-L-K, at citytech, which is one word, .cuny.edu.
That's K-F-A-L-K at citytech, T-E-C-H, all one word, .cuny.edu. Well, Kathleen Falk, I want to thank you very much for coming on to Health Styles and talking about this important problem that we hear very little about. We've been talking with Kathleen Falk, who is a family nurse practitioner on the faculty at City College of Technology at City University of New York and director of the college's mentoring program for Children of Promise. Kathleen, thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you, listeners.
And I thank the listeners too for tuning in today to Health Styles. And I want to thank Reggie Johnson for engineering today's program. Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. And you can visit our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Health Styles. Thank you.